This is Conquering Columbus.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Conquering Columbus podcast. This is Andy here, filling in for Mike this week. And on today's episode, Mike is interviewing Corey Dayhoff, founder and president of the Dayhoff Group. During this episode, Mike and Corey dive into AI, machine learning, and data, and how Corey and his team help businesses better utilize these tools. Early on in the show, Mike asked Corey about how he ended up getting into computer technology, and funny enough, the story involved fishing.
Funny story, I was working at Kmart, putting myself through college, and one night a guy came in, and it was like 10 minutes before the store was going to close, and he needed fishing gear because he was taking a client out the next day fishing. The guy had never fished before, had no idea what he was doing, so you know, I'm running around grabbing lures, grabbing fishing poles and stuff. And he's, you know, he's talking to me while I'm doing this, and he asks me what I'm doing for a degree. I was kind of explaining, and he goes, you should look at technology. And he started talking a little bit about what he was doing, what he was seeing. And that was really the early days of PCs. And it sounded interesting. Obviously, it sounded interesting enough because that Monday I changed my degree and never looked back.
Later, Corey talked about the impact of ChatGPT and the future of tools like it.
So ChatGPT has done a great job of educating the market, which is, you know, really what we've been trying to do for 5 or 6 years here is the art of the possible, right? When you go in and talk to an organization, the hardest part we had to deal with when going in and talking to organizations about what this kind of technology can do for you is getting them over the hump of what are you talking about? So ChatGPT's done that for us, and it's really cool tech, but it really lacks in like business use cases right now. If you think about what ChatGPT does, there's like 5 core things that it does really well. Almost none of those have a lot of business application from a use case perspective.
As the show wraps up, Mike asked Corey if he had any advice for our listeners, and he spoke about the importance of aligning work with life and your passion.
Every doctor I know has at least one gigantic hobby that takes up a lot of their time because you're not, you know, you don't get fulfilled as a person with just one thing. And so, you know, your company and your job cannot be that one thing in your life that's going to fulfill everything. But you have to figure out what those other things that fulfill you are, and you got to make sure that what you do allows you to do those things, right? So if you want to travel and you want to circle the world twice a year, you know, you better make sure that you, whatever you do for a living as a job function, can support what you want to do from your goal and your passion.
This is a great interview, and as always, we hope you get a lot out of it. Thanks so much for tuning in. That's all from me. Let's get on with the show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Conquering Columbus podcast. This is your co-host, Mike, here. And today, I'm flying solo. Josh has left the state on a business trip, and so you're stuck with me. But luckily, we've got a great guest lined up for today. We are joined by Corey Dayhoff, co-founder and president of the Dayhoff Group, a federally certified women-owned business. And the Dayhoff Group is a born-in-the-cloud service provider supporting their customers in accelerating the reinvention of their applications and data in the cloud. They excel in developing and deploying data lakes and analytics, ML and AI and automated attendance and data modernization plus development by leveraging AI technologies from IBM and AWS to drive measurable business results. So I'm excited to be talking with Corey today about the AI revolution, what's real and what's made up, as well as how AI can help drive your business forward. Welcome to Conquering Columbus, Corey.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah. And, you know, I was having a hard time saying all that stuff, so I'm really interested to have you explain it to me a little better. But
well, I was hoping you were going to explain it to me. So.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, then we'll just talk about nothing for 30 minutes and get you out of here.
But perfect.
One of the first places we'd like to start is just get a little bit of background on yourself, your story, kind of how you got to where you are today. So let's start there.
Sure. So I'll go way back. So grew up in Colorado. Everybody asked me, you know, why Columbus? It's exactly one gas tank away from Colorado. So yeah, you hop on the road and boom, you end up in Columbus from Colorado. Attended Colorado State University where I met my wife now of 28 years. Lived here in Columbus for 27 years. 3 fantastic children, all born here, grew up here. Columbus is now my home.
So Columbus, and you went to Colorado State. What'd you study at Colorado State?
Computer information technology.
Computer information technology. So at the time, I guess what I'm curious about is kind of what drew you towards that particular route. Like, it sounds like you've been always interested in tech and technology, but what was there any kind of like inciting incident for you, or was it just you've always been interested?
You know, it wasn't, right? Because technology was not even on my radar when I went to college. I had a general business degree going, and you know, kind of a funny story. I was working at Kmart, putting myself through college, and one night a guy came in, and it was like 10 minutes before the store was going to close. And he needed fishing gear because he was taking a client out the next day fishing. The guy had never fished before, had no idea what he was doing. So, you know, I'm running around grabbing lures, grabbing fishing mm-hmm. poles and stuff. And he's, you know, he's talking to me while he's, while I'm doing this, and he asked me what I'm doing for a degree. And I was kind of explaining, and he goes, you know, you should look at technology. Mm-hmm. And he started talking a little bit about what he was doing, what he was seeing. And that was really the early days of PCs.
Yeah.
And it sounded interesting. Obviously, it sounded interesting enough because that Monday I changed my degree and never looked back.
So you just kind of had a conversation with a guy at Kmart and decided to change your whole life.
I had no clue, right? Yeah. No clue. But young and dumb and got lucky.
Right, right. Well, I think that, you know, at least you use your degree. I have a biology degree. I thought I was going to be a dentist and now I'm in tech and in sales. So, you know, as you kind of got into that world, right? If you never look back, then obviously you had, like, it all continued to interest you and drive you forward. What did you do coming out of college?
So I worked for a transportation company in Richmond, Virginia. I ended up leaving Colorado because there was no jobs there. Moved all the way back east to Richmond, Virginia. Worked for that technology company. Ended up taking a job at IBM and moved to Columbus. Mm-hmm. Had literally been in Columbus for 2 hours of my entire life during an interview process, and then moved my wife and I here on a 2-hour interview.
And so you get here, and was there a point in your career that you decided to start your own company? Like, what triggered that kind of entrepreneurial mindset? And had you always imagined doing that?
You know, I think I did, right? So, you know, from the age of 8, I had, you know, I was working, right? I had a paper route when I was 8 years old. If you think about back in the day when you used to have paper boys, you know, you were like your own little, you were like your own little business person, right? Your own little entrepreneur. You had, you know, I was an employee of the newspaper. I bought newspapers from them. I delivered them to people, and I collected money every mm-hmm. month, right? So from 8 on, I was doing what an entrepreneur does, right? You're managing cash. You're paying your vendors. When I wanted to go on vacation, I'd hire the neighborhood kid to do it. So I had employees. Mm-hmm. You know, you kind of, that I think always was in me, in the mindset. So, sure. You know, when I got out of college, and I was always looking for different ideas to start something.
Yeah. And so you start the Dayhoff Group in 1997. Can you talk about that? And you mentioned you had a co-founder, right? So what was that process like? How did the company come together? And what was the problem you were trying to solve initially?
So a couple questions there. So my wife tells me she's pregnant. I come home that night and said, I'm going to start a company and quit my job.
Yeah, yeah.
So that went over really well.
Good timing.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll try that with my wife tonight. We'll see what she says.
And we'll back up a little bit on, you know, you kind of look at how the genesis of the whole thing. So I'm working for IBM and I'm doing work at Nationwide Insurance, right? And this is going to sound like ridiculously dumb from a technology perspective, from today's perspective, but we were implementing a document imaging system at Nationwide Insurance. And back then, how insurance worked is you would send, if you wanted to get a piece of insurance, you'd fill out a piece of paper, you'd send it to the insurance company. Mm-hmm. They would literally photocopy it, make 20 different yep. copies, send it to a bunch of different people. And then a
little yellow and pink paper.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. And then ultimately they would get, you know, someone would send something back to you on your estimate for insurance. So we were doing, you know, like magical stuff because we were scanning paper in for them mm-hmm. and they were sending it to their PCs, which required a bunch of extra hardware and stuff you wouldn't even think you'd have to have today to handle that sure. size of information across.
Is this those pre, this primitive is pre networks. Like full, like this is pre full scale internet, right? So we're talking like, this is probably all hardware, like
there was
LAN.
No internet.
Was there even LAN at this point?
No. Well, there was Token Ring.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, there was LAN, but it was Token Ring and it was ridiculously slow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like 1 megabyte was, I think, the max.
Oh yeah. And now I get 500 megabytes per second at my house.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Right. Insane. But during that process, we used to have mid-market insurance companies come in and want to know what we were doing because we mm-hmm. had other salespeople telling them what we were doing there. And since I was the only tech guy on the entire team that could talk, mm-hmm. they had me doing the presentations. And then what I found was that afterwards, I was getting emails and phone calls from those other insurance companies asking me, hey, can we get a quote on this? Can we do it? What I realized was the salespeople, because it wasn't a 7-figure deal, mm-hmm. salespeople didn't want to talk to them. I thought, you know what? I can take this to market. We can do this stuff, right? So my brother was coming out of college. My wife and I decided to start the company, brought him on, started the company, and 27 years later.
So what, as you kind of start getting things off the ground, I'm always interested really in the early goings on of a company, mm-hmm. because this is kind of the point at which I think it's something like what, like 0.5% of businesses make it past 3 years.
Right.
Right. So those early stages are so integral to building a foundation of a successful business and building a business that can last. So I'm curious, how did the market receive what you guys were doing? Was there, what was the marketing plan? Like, how did you get business going? Right. What, how'd you get that first dollar, that first customer? And how did you actually move from the scramble that is that early business into something that could be grown and scaled?
So I really worked for the first 6 months. I worked my job at IBM and I worked building this business at night. Found clients at night just through relationships and so forth. So I had a couple different projects going on by the time. It was just too overwhelming for me to, mm-hmm. to do my day job and do that. That's when I left. You're absolutely right in, you know, I was 28 years old. I didn't mm-hmm. know what I didn't know. Luckily, one of my first clients was an entrepreneur also. And he took me aside one day at lunch and said, hey, you need to read this book called The E-Myth. Mm-hmm. And if anybody who wants to be an entrepreneur has to read, you have to read that book. It's a real quick read, but very insightful as far as working on, not in. And that probably saved us.
Yeah, I've heard, actually, I think The E-Myth has been recommended multiple times simply on this podcast alone. There's a couple other books that run around, right? That kind of make those rounds. I think one of them is EOS, Entrepreneur's Operating System. Yep. And then the other one that we just read recently was KPRs, which is Measure What Matters. It's right. But that's more for scale than for early days. But yeah, there's books that make the rounds with the entrepreneurial circle. Right. And that E-Myth book is one of them for sure. So great recommendation if you're out there and you're considering being an entrepreneur. Obviously, things have changed a lot since then, right? Technology's changed, things have accelerated. Talk me through kind of what were the big milestones for the company as you grew? And how did you guys keep up with the pace of technological changes?
You know, they happen so rapidly. Probably the first one was the first big client we got, which was a state contract. And we had to add like five people and double the size of the company in the first year. And it was a multi-year contract. So that was big for us because that meant reoccurring revenue coming in. You know, that was probably the first big milestone. Second big milestone would have been getting involved in the channel programs of some of the partners we had. So IBM early on was a main partner for us. Mm-hmm. So we resold their technology, implemented their technology, went to business, you know, with them and kind of jointly hand in hand with them for a lot of years, the first 15 or so years, almost exclusively. And so, you know, those are kind of some of the big milestones, I think, along the way. There's also scary times, and there's going to be. And if you start a company, you're in a little bit afraid every day, you probably are in the wrong business.
Yeah. And so looking at it now, right, as you kind of, everything's scaled up now and what you're working on today, can you walk me through kind of some of the projects that you work on today and what the technology looks like?
Absolutely. So, you know, I tell everybody, we get pulled in to do the hard stuff. Mm-hmm. No one ever pulls us in to do the easy stuff, and which is probably a good thing, right? If it's easy, they're going to do it themselves. I'll give you an example of some of the technology, some of the projects we've been pulling on lately. So we worked with, it's about a year ago, we worked with a pizza company that is a pizza franchisor. And if you know how franchisors work, you know, every time they get a new franchisee, mm-hmm. they really give a piece of their business to their franchisee, right? They lose a little bit of control, right? They have all the processes that they want. They can control all the distribution, they control all that stuff, but that franchisee runs a day-to-day operation. So it's a little scary for the franchisor, right? And so the way that company at that time was managing their quality that was going out the door to that franchisee was they would send in secret shoppers. So somebody would go in and buy a pizza. They had a 25-point checklist. So they'd take the pizza home. They'd grade the crust. They would grade all in those 25-point scale. They'd grade that. They'd send it into the pizza company. Pizza company would send them back a certificate for another pizza, right? Mm-hmm. So we were able to, and if you think of how a pizza shop works, they have, it's kind of an assembly line, sure. right? So they're just adding ingredients to it, stick it in the oven, put it in the box, goes out the door. So we use the cameras within that pizza shop to identify how that pizza was put together along the way, right? So we could tell how many pieces of pepperoni, we could tell how much sauce they put down, we could tell how much cheese they had on it, where the cheese was on the pizza, where the sauce was on the pizza. After it came out of the oven, we could tell how hot it was baked to. We could tell by the crust whether it was done or not.
All this without somebody actually looking at the tape.
Nobody has to look at the tape, all AI technology, right? So it's looking at the video and it's grading. It's doing that 25-point scale grading that they could do on every you know, 150,000th pizza. We could do that on every single pizza coming out the door. Hmm. If you think of what that could do, what that did for the organization is they could then figure out where to send their training dollars, right? They knew, I think a breakdown from an analytics perspective, all that data was poured back into the home office. They could tell like which of the shops were good, at what time of the day did they have issues, during rush times, did the quality go down? They could roll up that data and identify, okay, this person who creates the pizzas or pepperoni pizzas needs training, or if they had a brand new ingredient and item coming out, they could, you know, adjust the, you know, you're not putting the anchovies around the right side of the pizza or whatever. They could make those adjustments, but it gave them that control over their quality of their product and some kind of assurance that they had good quality, and it was across the entire system, the entire scale.
Yeah.
So those are the kind of projects we get pulled in on.
How do you even go about implementing something like that? Like, are you integrating with the current security cameras? You got to install new cameras? Is there in software build out install, or are you leveraging other software products that are out there? I'm just curious about kind of all the details of something like that.
All right. So we, in this instance, we were able to use cameras they already had because they were high enough quality, right? And we built it out on a cloud model, all the development, all microservices, all fast transaction stuff. We're dumping any data. We're not collecting the video, so you don't have video of people doing stuff. You're collecting the data about the video, right? You're doing the grading, and then you're dumping the data after that. That way you don't end up with, you know, PPI information or anything like
that. So basically you're getting like a CSV dump of all the scoring criteria that can get rolled into some other platform.
Correct.
Interesting. How do you train an AI to understand the scoring system? That's the thing that I'm curious about, right? I mean, it's hard enough to train an AI how to play a game like chess. I can't imagine it'd be easy to train an AI to be like, yeah, that pizza's good, this pizza's bad.
Well, that comes back to my first response. They never bring us in for the easy stuff, right? So, you know, with enough data and enough time with a model, you can train it.
Mm-hmm. And is that, are you using machine learning in that at all? Or is it just, hey, we've got the AI built and we're good to go?
Machine learning is used under the covers and well, obviously in the video components of that.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Well, that already, you know, I'm going to jump ahead a little bit because we had something on our conversation topic that is a hot topic in today's world, which is the new ChatGPT OpenAI setup. And we're hearing about like, hey, these types of tools are going to take over. I've got friends. In fact, I've had lots of conversations about where's my job going to be if this thing works as well as it does. Now, I think some of that's overblown, but I do think there's a lot of potential in this type of technology. So I'd be curious about getting your perspective on the whole ChatGPT thing. What's crazy nonsense and what's actually beneficial and what's real?
So ChatGPT has done a great job of educating the market, which is, you know, really what we've been trying to do for 5 or 6 years here is, is the art of the possible, right? When you go in to talk to an organization, the hardest part we had to deal with when going in and talking to organizations about what this kind of technology can do for you is getting them over the hump of what are you talking about, right? So ChatGPT's done that for us, and it's really cool tech, but it really lacks in like business use cases right now. If you think about what ChatGPT does, there's like five core things that it does really well. Almost none of those have a lot of business application from a use case perspective. They're almost taking the business philosophy of a Microsoft business philosophy there, which is you build it for the consumer and then they end up dragging it into business. Because you think about like what Office did back in the day, back in the 90s and early 2000s, everybody was using Office and their personal computers at home and they drug them to the office, right? Nobody was using Microsoft Office at the office until people started dragging their laptops in or their computers in to use it. So Microsoft worked backwards into it. That's really how I see ChatGPT right now. They're putting cool technology out there that people are playing with, and then the business use cases will come.
Sure. It honestly, I don't know why it reminds me of this, but it reminds me of kind of the situation with the car and Henry Ford, right? One of the things that he kind of said was, hey, if I gave the people what they asked me for, I would have just built a faster horse.
Right.
Right. You kind of see that same thing with technology, right? People, if you don't understand or there's new technology coming to the forefront and people can't understand how it can impact them, then nobody buys it. But if you start getting them to use something like that in their personal lives now, and you know, if you think about the car as an example, even right, like the roads weren't even built to use a car, but then over time it revolutionized the entire transportation industry. from semi-trucks to other things. Do you think we're going to see something similar in the next 10, 20 years with AI and machine learning? Or do you think it'll take longer to really adopt that technology?
No, it'll be shorter, much shorter. You're already seeing this technology embedded in other things. So this stuff gets consumed. Nobody's going to build, or very few are going to build a ChatGPT and just use that alone. Mm-hmm. Like that's the only thing that it's used for, is just a chat service and mm-hmm. it's doing blah for me, right? They're going to integrate that in with a bunch of other things. Mm-hmm. And so it blurs the lines of what it is in the end. And mm-hmm. when you look back, just as you mentioned there, you look back 20 years from now and ChatGPT was just the steering wheel on what became the car.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. And I could also go on a complete tangent here. I won't. I'll try and avoid it. But I could go on a complete tangent about artificial intelligence, artificial superintelligence, that whole discussion of like, should we be building machines that can learn and improve themselves, right? But there's a whole big tangent on that. If you want to read up on something that I find interesting, go look that up. There's a lot of very intelligent people talking about how we can build a robot that doesn't become a Skynet. So,
right. Hey everybody, Mike here. We're going to take a quick break to talk about one of our sponsors, One Columbus, and we are very excited to partner with One Columbus. They really, really share the same vision as us here at the Conquering Columbus podcast, which is really building up the Columbus region to be one of the most prosperous regions in the United States. And One Columbus serves as the business location resource for companies across Central Ohio and around the world as those companies grow, innovate, and compete within the global economy. And they help us lead a regional growth strategy that develops and attracts the world's most competitive companies, grows a highly adaptive workforce, and prepares our communities for the future, inspiring innovation across the board. Their mission really is just ensuring the Columbus region is a vibrant place to build businesses and careers. So again, we really appreciate all of their support. You want to learn more about them, go check out their website, columbusregion.com. That's columbusregion.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll be right back into the episode.
I'm going to take a step back here. What does your team look like today? What are you guys doing today, like if you look at your organization?
So people-wise, you know, mm-hmm. we've got a bunch of great technologists that, you know, I'm lucky several of them have been with me for over 20 years. So they have a breadth and depth of technology expertise. Mm-hmm. You know, in our business, one of the key things is find people who know how to deliver, yeah. right? That you can count on delivering every time. That's probably true for every business. But in ours, it's so steep in technology and difficult to learn that it's critical for us to have that kind of confidence in somebody, right? So we're lucky and blessed to have, you know, a great team of deeply technical people that we can count on delivering every time. I've got, you know, fantastic salespeople that really understand the customers in the market and, mm-hmm. you know, practice leads for our AI practice, our automation practice, and mm-hmm. our, data science practice that do a fantastic job. Is that the part of the question you wanted to ask?
I think that hit on where I wanted to go. Right. And then as you look at kind of the projects you guys are working on and the things that are real today, what are the real benefits people are getting from tools like this?
Besides the pizza one, let's talk about some of the chat technology and kind mm-hmm. of what they're doing there, right? So, you know, it's pseudo in its infancy, but there's real hard dollar ROI activity that we see around the customer service mm-hmm. use case there. You know, let's take an example. You have a company that has 20 customer service agents, like relatively small, 20 customer service agents. 80% of the questions those customer service agents are going to get are going to be the same exact question, mm-hmm. right? And we just had this conversation before we went on, right?
Yep.
It's going to be, where are you located at?
I can't log in.
Do you open? I can't log in, blah, 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 right? Mm-hmm. If you can eliminate, just say 50% of that, you're going to free up about 35% of the time for those customer service agents. Not so you can reduce staff by 35%, but so you can focus on the harder issues that your mm-hmm. customer's calling in, right? You can spend a little more time with them. You can improve your customer service, right? You can do those kinds of things rather than spending time answering, yeah, we're open from 8 to 5.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So those are real hard. That's where companies are at today in a lot of circumstances. And if you think about ChatGPT, ChatGPT is not very accurate today. Mm-hmm. And you've probably seen a ton of articles about that. You can ask it a ton of questions. It is going to get them wrong because it's a generative model on its answer capabilities, right? It's going to generate an answer for you that it's going to use AI technology to try to answer the question in the way that you asked the question, right? Mm-hmm. So if you look at kind of the chat technology or the assistant technology that businesses use, you have to be right 100% of the time. You can't give your customers inaccurate information, right? So you have to use models that are trained specifically on your business for your language and also trained specifically on how to answer questions on the back end, right? Mm-hmm. That's kind of today, and that's why, you know, ChatGPT really can't do that today, but there's other technologies out there that can. You know, IBM's technology with Watson Assistant, we leverage that pretty heavily in doing those kinds of things. And the accuracy of those models, you're not going to find an inaccurate answer
right
there. It may not be able to answer, but you're not going to give the customer an inaccurate answer, right?
Yeah.
Now the next phase and the technologies there and where we see customers now starting to prototype this stuff is really in a virtual worker concept. So give you an example of that. So let's say a virtual worker actually does work on the back end, right? So it will perform, it will update systems on the back end for you. It will retrieve information on the back end. It will take down tasks and perform those tasks later and communicate back to the customer in a different fashion or a different time in a different way, right? So a good example of that would be those virtual workers will start to work alongside people doing work. So like an insurance underwriter today, if you think about the way that they would work for, let's say my business, a commercial business, they want to write a new policy. To do that, they've got to do background checks. They got to do a credit check. They've got to, there's about 15 different questions for a technology company that an insurance company has to ask before it can write a policy, right? Typically an underwriter, once they get that policy information, they have to go out and do all that stuff, right? They have to ask for all that information. The system doesn't prompt them. A virtual worker sitting alongside that underwriter will gather all that information, pre-fill in the information that already knows is accurate, and then only leave the questions that need somebody from a human perspective, kind of dive in, figure out, and do that. And on top of that, as it watches that person do that work, it gets smarter about it. And so the next time, it can go a little bit farther and a little bit farther, right? Sure. So that virtual worker concept, that's where chatbot is going.
Right.
Right. It's where chat technology is going. It will be a virtual worker that makes us all faster, better, and more accurate.
Yeah. For example, right, in our business, we've talked about this. And one of the things that we thought of from a virtual, I guess you would call it a virtual worker standpoint is, right, having a support chat system. But if that support chat system did more than just chat, for instance, maybe it could reset your password if you were having trouble, things that we normally have to do. Right. From a support standpoint, right, then it becomes moves from a chatbot to actually taking action and helping fix problems.
Right. And in a SaaS model, so we've seen this too, in a SaaS model, that virtual assistant can go into the logs on your system, identify, you may call in and say, hey, X, Y, and Z is not working. It will go into the logs and identify what the issue is, correct the issue on the back end of the system. No developer gets involved.
Yeah.
No customer service agent gets involved. No tickets created because it gets solved immediately.
Yep. No, that makes a lot of sense. So as you kind of look at like the different businesses that are incorporating this, are we still kind of, because it feels like we're still in the early adopter stage where a lot of people are kind of testing this out. Is there a type of business that has better position to take advantage of this? Or is this something that any business, no matter the size, scale, should be considering?
You know, AI is going to be embedded in everything. And almost every company today uses some AI in some fashion, one way or another, whether they know it or not, right? But a company 500 million and less is probably going to just leverage whatever comes with their line of business application, whatever AI is embedded in there, right? A company bigger than that, a $1 billion company, they're going to create their own AI. You know, a $1 billion company kind of operates and functions a little bit differently. Their scales are different, right? The number of employees, it's worth it for them to build their own AI models because they're going to save so much over the thousands of people they have working for them. Whereas a $500 million company, you know, let's say has 3,000 people, you don't have enough scale to have create your own AI.
Can't really invest enough money to make it make sense.
Correct.
Because there's a certain point, right? Like you look at the ROI and you got to say, okay, well, I'm saving 5%, 10% of my workforce's time if I build this, right? And it's going to cost me X. Like it's just a simple calculation. And the bigger you get, the more that X number is.
So the minds will take advantage of the technology as it comes out and as it gets embedded in the stuff they're already using.
Makes sense.
Yep.
Okay. And so what about goals for the future of the Dayhoff Group? Where do you guys want to take the business? What are the long-term goals? Do you see yourself getting into new markets, new products, or do you want to just scale the company?
We are constantly changing, right? We're always looking for that new technology that's coming out that is going to benefit our customer base and new customer base. and expand. We expect to almost double over the next 18 months. We're deepening our partnership with both AWS and IBM and some of our other partners that we use, like Talon and some of those, but always looking for kind of what is the next big technology that we can leverage. We have some new AI, some AI technology around video that we've been leveraging from a company that, has, it's amazing how this stuff, we talked about the acceleration of technology. It's amazing how much better it is than some of the other stuff we used just 3 months ago.
Mm-hmm. It is incredible. And kind of, having been part of the generation that really grew up right in the middle of all that, it's just kind of always been there for me, right? Like when I was a kid, dial-up was here. Then I got into high school, internet got better, right? Like it's just, I've been constantly in that, right? So it's, I feel like I have a very different perspective on it. I'm like, that's just what happens, right? Like things just go crazy, haywire. But do you think it'll start to slow down at all? Or do we see, because like there's a lot of people talk about that theory, right? Of like, it's just, we continue to go faster and faster and faster. But is there a limit? Are we going to hit that kind of S curve? Or do you see just continuous
No chance it slows down. Every time I think it's going to slow down, it doubles, right?
Yeah.
There are, and it's kind of wavy, the technology, right? It will grow really fast and then it almost hits a peak and then the next thing happens and it grows. So there's peaks and valleys to like acceleration, but it's always an upward curve, always an upward curve.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time, I mean, companies can't consume, the technology moves so fast, companies can't consume the technology that quickly.
Right.
If you think of, especially like a large organization, we just talked about building their own stuff, it'll take them 3 years to build something
that'll already be behind.
By the time it gets deployed, it's done.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what the world looks like here in 10, 20 years. But how do you see that impacting Columbus in general? How do you see AI and data analytics really getting more involved with the growth of the city, right? Which we are going to have a lot of growth in the next 10, 20 years.
Right, right. You know, the interesting thing about COVID is it caused really the focus to disperse away from Silicon Valley, right? The tech talent dispersed itself through the United States. It's not all just so focused on Silicon Valley and so focused, in California. You can find great tech talent almost anywhere now. And Columbus, luckily, is positioned really well to take advantage of that. And you look at some of the new big labels that are coming to town, giving us exposure, Intel, being a huge one. We talked about before about, people's views of Columbus outside of Columbus. They think of us as a small town. And then you start talking about all the headquarters that are here, and it blows people away.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of great big companies that are here. On top of that, you have OSU printing new tech experts every day.
Mm-hmm.
So it's positioned really well to take advantage of the boom that we're going to see in technology and the investments that they've made here in Columbus and kind of perpetuating that.
Yeah, let's hope so. Well, Corey, I think that's kind of a good place to head towards some of our last questions of the show, but I've enjoyed talking to you so far. One of the first things that we always ask is, hey, do you have any advice for our listeners? Now, oftentimes they tend to be entrepreneurial minded or at least interested in entrepreneurship and what's happening around Columbus. So that'll give you a little bit of perspective on who we're talking to.
I had a friend of mine one time tell me, align your dreams with your ability to fulfill those dreams. And that's really deep.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't that deep of a thinker. So I'd hate to give him credit. But, what I took from that, and he was a doctor, and every doctor I know, you would think they spend 20 years, getting a degree to do what they want to do and their passion for life, right? And every doctor I know has at least one gigantic hobby that takes up a lot of their time because you don't get fulfilled as a person with just one thing. And so, your company and your job cannot be that one thing in your life that's going to fulfill everything. You have to figure out what those other things that fulfill you are. And you got to make sure that what you do allows you to do those things.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if you want to travel and you want to, circle the world twice a year, you better make sure that whatever you do for a living as a job function can support what you want to do from your goal and your passion.
Yeah. So don't make your passion trying to get to Pluto.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be difficult.
Bad goal.
Yeah. But maybe, hey, I want to travel to a state or a country every year. Better idea.
But a lot of people do that, right? A lot of people have goals and their passions are way outside the
realm
of what they've decided they're going to do from a profession perspective.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's a fair point, right? Like if you're always going to, if you set goals like that, like, hey, I want to, my dream is to travel to Pluto someday. Well, I'm going to be pretty disappointed in that venture.
Yeah. If you do it, I'm going to be amazed.
Right. Well, and the other thing that I talk about a lot is if you're going to set a goal, right? This is something I focus on a lot because I lead a sales team. We set quotas. We set like goals are really important, but they have to be both difficult and at the same time attainable. And I think what you see is right. The analogy I always use is I don't know how fast you are, but if I said, hey, I need you to go out and run a 5-minute mile tomorrow, would you do any training between now and then to try and hit that 5-minute mile? Probably not, right?
Like, no, I'm not going to hit it. So it's not going to happen.
Right. I'm just, exactly. I'm not going to do it. Right. And so I wouldn't train. I wouldn't try and do it. I just would say, okay, well, I better go find something else to do because I'm never going to hit this 5-minute mile. But if I said, hey, I want you to run an 8-minute mile in 3 months, that's a little more doable.
Right.
Probably do that. Let me try that. Right. So if you don't set the right goals with that are attainable, right, that can actually get done, you won't actually do the actions to get there because the goal is too big and it's not. You're too far off, right?
You're exactly right. You know, and that's a lot of people have that problem in life in general, right? Mm-hmm. Set a gigantic goal that there's no way that they're ever going to get to. And if they just broke it down, they could get there.
Right. So, and that doesn't mean you never set that BHAG, we call it sometimes, big, hairy, audacious goal, right? If you haven't heard of that, it's a BHAG, right? My BHAG might be, hey, I want to run a 3.5-hour marathon and qualify for the Boston Marathon. Now, that was my BHAG, right? I'd have to break that down into a lot of smaller goals because I'm nowhere near that at the moment. But you set that 8-minute mile goal, and then you kind of just set smaller little goals that you can work your way towards that BHAG. Awesome. Well, Corey, it's been great chatting with you. I'm going to hit you with our last question of the show here. That's centered around the theme on the podcast, which is live uncomfortably. So without telling you too much about why we chose that phrase for a show about entrepreneurs, business leaders around Columbus, what do you think of when you hear it? How does it apply to your life and career?
I play golf as my hobby, right? Uh-huh. That's my big hobby. Mm-hmm. And you couldn't pick a more uncomfortable, ridiculously dumb game that almost nobody can master.
Really is.
Yes. So I kind of live in that state of uncomfortness in my hobby as well as work. You know, I think humans operate best when they're a little bit uncomfortable or in a state of discomfort, right? No athlete ever performed at their top by, you know, sitting on a couch.
Yep.
Right. Every day for the last 27 years, I wake up thinking about all of my employees, right? Mm-hmm. How can I make them successful today? Right. What's the next big thing in IT? And how do I make sure that we're prepared for that? Right. How's our cash flow? You know, how's our pipeline? You know, our customers, are we being successful for our customers today? Right. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the state I live in. Right. And, you know, being an entrepreneur, if you don't operate in that mode, you're doing yourself a disservice. And I don't know one entrepreneur that doesn't operate in that mode consistently. And, you know, if you're in a role where you're totally comfortable, you're probably in the wrong role.
Yep, 100%. Well, Corey, I think that's a great answer. Thank you so much for your time coming on to talk about yourself and the Day Huff Group. We appreciate you joining the show.
It was a pleasure. Had a blast. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, and Conquerors, thanks so much for tuning in. If you want to learn more about the Day Huff Group, you can go ahead and head on over to
dayhuffgroup.com.
dayhuffgroup.com. If you join this interview, you want to hear more just like it, go ahead and hit that subscribe button on whatever podcast app you are listening on. It'll make sure you don't miss a single one of our episodes. It really does help us out. So thank you so much for tuning in. We'll talk to you next week.